So, hey, Matt, how's it going?
Oh, it's doing great, man. I'm having my Starbucks protein bistro box and some homemade coffee, and I'm ready to start the day, although you're already midday, but...
Yeah, it's 2 here, so...
Yeah, well, it's 9 here, so I feel a little bit lazy, but I've been at the gym, so I'll justify myself. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. A lot of fun stuff going on. Good times. Just switched my Linux distribution, so lots of fun there.
Yeah.
Which means I'm like fixing a lot of little stuff over and over again for like 2 weeks until I get it all figured out. So
nice. Well, I know I had at least one thing on my mind that was left over from the last show that I wanted to ask you about. So I figure that's at least a nice little spark point for us to have some conversation.
Okay.
So we've got a lot of web-based kind of languages in our stack. I mean, I've done a tiny bit of .NET in the past, and we're primarily PHP shop, and I do a little bit of Ruby, and then Adam, who works with us, also does some Ruby. And I've been thinking for a while, we're missing out on the ability to do maybe some more like complex processing type things. And I just feel like what we've got is a pretty wide stack in the web world. And then, of course, you know, all front end and design and stuff. But what we're missing is kind of maybe some more heavy lifters. And so every time something comes up where someone's talking about Python, Scala, Erlang, Go, all these kind of languages that to me feel like a little more kind of more powerful, I feel like, oh man, I should learn one of those. And I know that you've had a little more experience than I do in a lot of those areas. So I just wanted to like kind of hear from your perspective, you know, if someone were a normal web shop, let's say you're like me and you're a PHP developer, you got some Ruby abilities and you say, I want to add maybe some graph processing or data analysis or something heavy lifting that I don't currently have in my stack. First of all, kind of, am I crazy in kind of lumping all those languages together? And then also, would you have one that you would just kind of like say, you know what, if I were you, that would be the one I would target?
Wow, that's an interesting question. It's funny. I think if you're like a web agency, then you have a lot of interesting pressures. And that's kind of what makes the job. It's a different kind of development work than there, you know, other people are facing. So if you're working at a company where you have this product, like let's say you're working for Netflix, you have a completely different set of circumstances than when you're creating applications for clients and you're working for many clients. And I don't know how much this affects you, but a lot of web agencies are dealing with competitive pressures. So you have to kind of come in quickly on a lower budget. And so you're kind of pushed into these certain areas like rapid application development frameworks and everything. And so it's just a different aspect of the industry, right? I think that it's really interesting that a lot of people, and myself included, we have had a lot of experience in this part, in this sector of the industry. And we tend to really specialize in, you know, Python or Ruby or PHP. And these are the languages that I think kind of win a lot in this sector. So PHP obviously does well. We have like WordPress everywhere, you know, then you have the Drupals and et cetera, Magento. And then you start to get into more custom builds. Like I think your company does a lot of custom builds, and I've always done a lot of like bespoke CMSs and stuff like that. It's funny because you don't really actually in those situations, I think, need a lot of different programming languages or a lot of different tools. If you can get it done pretty effectively and competitively without making a mess of it with what you have, then that's it's pretty compelling, right? But there's always an opportunity that you could be capable of doing more. So the question is, I think, to me, where are you really emphasizing the work you're already doing? Where are you iterating on those skills? And where do you look to bring in new concepts and new tools and new technologies? Because if you're already able to compete using PHP and building these applications and your team already has a lot of skills here, is it disruptive to bring in new tools? Like when is it a good thing and when is it a bad thing, right? So for me, it's more like, what am I doing? What kind of applications do we tend to do? Do we want strategically to move into a different kind of place? Are there technologies that I've heard of that might actually affect me that I'm not sure, you know, is a good fit? And then kind of just exposing myself to those over time. I mean, are you doing that kind of thing, or are you getting into situations where you think that, hey, this technology might be a good fit for me, and then you play with it? Or do you mostly kind of take, okay, we've learned these lessons from the previous application, and now we want to improve the way we do things? It seems like a really internal approach versus looking externally, right? So do you find you're both looking internally and externally mostly, or do you mostly just look internally?
I think it's part of it is just the fact that I think I'm a little earlier in the stack of, rather than having saying I've done work playing in all those languages, it's more like I've just kind of admired them from afar, and seen kind of conversations from folks I respect about how, you know, like I hate to even tie the word microservices in here because I know it's the hotness now, but service-oriented architecture and the at least the predecessors or whatever of microservices are definitely things that we've been, you know, trying to do a lot, because the more you cram things into a single application, the more, well, there's a million reasons why it's beneficial. And those are concrete. On a daily basis, we're in a situation where, you know, we need to do a certain type of processing in our images. And so we want to isolate that kind of processing into a little microservice that just runs on its own in a subdomain and a separate repo and a separate application and is self-contained. And then everybody else doesn't know about it. It's a black box. We've got a lot of those little types of things where you're processing a certain type of data, or you're doing something to your MySQL or your, you know, whatever it ends up being. And right now we still do all of those usually in, you know, in PHP, and sometimes they're in Ruby, and sometimes it's like we're talking with a client and theirs is in, you know, .NET on Azure thing. But as long as it's a black box microservice, it works fine. But often those things are kind of weird or different scaling needs, or, you know, something like that, where it's like those are the processor intensive things. Those are the code heavy things. Those are the architecture, or not architecture, but they need to do something more complicated, more theoretical or whatever. And so those are the spaces where I'm like, I know that PHP is not always really necessarily built for something like that. And Ruby, you know, is not necessarily built for something like that. Whereas I know that, like, when people think of big data, like, for example, for APIs, often we're doing crazy amounts of crunching on incredible amounts of data. Now, I'm not talking the classic big data or whatever, but we've got Elasticsearch databases with millions or tens of millions of rows of social data or whatever that we're doing analysis based on. And right now that analysis is basically just using Ruby or PHP. And often I think, man, from what I've heard, like, let's use that example. I could probably get something better if that little piece of the service was running using something other than Ruby or PHP. But I'm not to the point where I even know where to start looking.
So if you have a team that is experienced with PHP, why would you even bring Ruby in there? I'm asking to know, what is the perceived advantage of doing that?
Yeah, the main reason we have anything in Ruby is because of clients who want Ruby, or clients we've inherited Ruby projects. They're usually Rails projects. Now, we did have an interest, especially kind of before we discovered kind of more modern PHP and Laravel. We were definitely leaning heavier in the Rails direction. And so I spent quite a decent amount of time learning Ruby and Rails, enough to kind of suss it out whether we were going to use it, because we just hadn't found a really modern rapid application development framework in PHP. So we've got some stuff in Ruby, we've got some experience in Ruby, but right now anything new we do will be in PHP and probably with Laravel. But it's at least part of our world. But again, it's not because we're seeing Ruby is definitively providing something that PHP isn't. Honestly, personally, I get the same benefit out of Laravel that I do out of Rails, and the infrastructure is significantly easier and faster to get set up and cheaper to host. So right now that's less of the concern. We're only in Ruby right now just because of the circumstances of a project.
Because I was thinking it might be because developers wanted to work in Ruby, right?
I mean, that certainly happens, but in the end, I'm going to do what's best for our company regardless of what a developer would prefer.
So how do you decide what's best for your company? Why would using Ruby and PHP together not be as nice as using just PHP? I mean, we are kind of having this discussion under the assumption that you will have many types of tools in your stack.
Sure. And to me, Ruby and Rails and PHP and Laravel are the same tool, basically. That I like, of course, you know, Ruby is a more beautiful, more expressive syntax, and there's some great things there, and PHP is, you know, easier to install, easier to host, easier to hire for. And honestly, at this point, I don't see anything that I'm getting out of Rails, Ruby and Rails, that I'm not getting out of PHP and Laravel functionality-wise. So it's purely preference. And so at that point, if it's purely preference, then I don't care. So I'm going to do one that my team is most equipped to do and that can best serve the needs of the client, which for us is usually going to be PHP and Laravel, because it's cheaper, it's faster, you know, all this kind of stuff. So unless someone has a particular need or a project already is in Rails, we're going to be choosing PHP and Laravel. But we want to be flexible enough that if a client comes along and says, I've got a Rails code base, we don't say, sorry, either we're going to rewrite it in Laravel or we can't work on it. So that's basically the deciding process for me. And that's the thing, right? Is because to me, those two tools are not parallel. They're at the same level of the stack. And even like a .NET MVC, I probably couldn't, we don't have enough ability to take on .NET MVC type projects, but I consider it the same point in the stack, Right. So I don't want to go out and get .NET abilities unless we have a specific reason why getting clients in the .NET market is valuable. And that's because they are already there, not because I think it's going to add something onto our ability level.
So did I just hear you say that you would learn and become better at Ruby so that if somebody wanted you to take over a Ruby application, you could?
That's kind of why we have done that already. We keep up our Ruby abilities enough such that we don't always have to tell clients who are in the Ruby world no. But we're not competing with Thoughtbot. We're not nearly at the same level as an agency in the Ruby and Rails stack as we are in PHP or Laravel. But part of the reasons why I'm comfortable, I mean, Adam, when we hired Adam, one of the things that I appreciated about him was that he knows stuff outside of the PHP world, and he knew some Ruby, and it wasn't just because he could do Ruby for us, but the fact that his brain was outside of just the PHP world. But yeah, we want to keep that at least competency around, because we're doing a lot of work in startups and APIs and apps and stuff like that, and there's enough Ruby and Rails going on there that we want to at least have competence there.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to me, because it's hard to actually make a directly business argument for just learning spontaneous languages or whatever. I mean, you can say something like, yeah, we just have faith that it's going to improve our opportunities. But if you already have successful business, and if you're in the PHP web agency world, you pretty much don't ever need to leave because there will always be enough work. You can always do the same job day in, day out and have enough work. I have a few friends who work with me, and we're all kind of studying different things. So my buddy Jeroen, he's working with Erlang and Elixir, which is this functional, well, I'll just talk about Erlang, and Elixir is like more of like a modern twist on Erlang, but Erlang is this functional programming language that's designed to be modifiable while it's running. You can bring up services, and while that service is serving a client, you can bring up another service that does the same thing, migrate the data from one service to another, then take the old one down and stuff like that while it's all running. So it was designed, I think, at Ericsson for handling phone call stuff. So I really highly suggest you watch Erlang the movie. Have you seen it?
I've never even heard of it.
Okay, it's like 12 minutes. You got to watch Erlang the movie. You just have to do it.
All right, bookmarked.
And then Erlang the movie, the sequel, Erlang the movie 2, you have to watch that too.
Okay.
And then you'll get enough of an understanding of why people care about Erlang. And I think it's 20 minutes of your life, but it's not only informative, but it's quite entertaining. So it's a must watch. I'll put the information in the show notes as well. So that's Erlang, and it's really interesting. You can do a lot of things with it, and you can use it in modern stacks. But recently, with all this talk about microservices and distributing computation, Erlang is kind of becoming cool again, which is really awesome. And so there's interesting conferences where you can go and learn a lot about this stuff. But also a really great resource is Learn You in Erlang. So it's a website/book where you can kind of be walked through the syntax and everything. It's really effective, really cool. Then Nick, my designer developer buddy, he's learning Go. And Go is kind of like a fix for C++ being awful. And so the idea is it's a systems programming language, but it's like a fix for C++ and a fix for Node at the same time. Like, you can do all this concurrent WebSockety stuff really effectively in Go, and it has a lot of really cool advantages. Like, in OS X, you could say, build this for Windows, and it'll build a Windows binary, or build this for Linux. And it's just the compilation is so fast, and it's really cool. Oh, and Go also has this really neat thing where you're typing, and then you hit save, and then Go reformats your code. Because there is not competing code style standards. There's the Go tool saying, this is the standard and you will use it, and that is all. Because I will change your file. You may not code in any other style. So it's there's not even an argument. Like, out of the gate, that argument doesn't exist. It's the Go way or the highway.
I'm sold already.
It's really funny and really cool. The thing I'm not interested about regarding Go is that it's an imperative language. Like Python, Ruby, PHP, all these dynamic imperative languages. Yeah, I got enough of that. I can pick up one, and I've used all of them in some degree. Of course, I'm better in PHP than the other two, better in Ruby than I am in Python. But they're all imperative, and I'm more interested in functional languages because, to me, the difference between an imperative language and a functional language has the opportunity to teach me more. So, to me, Ruby and Python and PHP are just different flavors of the same thing.
Well, and I think it's worth pausing here because I think there's two things that you're talking about that I want to clarify both for me and for others. Okay. So First thing, you're putting Python in the PHP Ruby stack, and I had kind of separated it as a more powerful one, and I that was actually the one where I was a little on the edge. So you'd put Python more in the traditional web stack kind of world.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say web stack. PHP is really kind of a web domain language.
Right.
And Ruby isn't, and Python isn't. Those are general purpose languages. But DHH kind of showed that you could take a general purpose language, and specifically Ruby, and make it feel just like it's a web domain language. And part of that is because Ruby is really powerful for creating DSLs.
Yeah. And I think maybe part of what I was going for there is not saying it's a web stack language as if it's web only. I mean, I think I get that distinction, but more I have this arbitrary distinction in my mind that may be wrong, that there is this middle space where I use this to do the same stuff and I'm not getting a ton of benefit, like additional power or whatever, switching from one to the other. And in that space I had, you know, PHP, Ruby, you know, and then .NET, kind of the web world of .NET. And then I had this hypothetical higher world of the better, quote unquote, better, more powerful, you know, Uber languages. And I think part of it is just like that's a little bit arbitrary. But would you, if that were a reasonable distinction, or you could just say, no, it's not, would you put Python more in the, you know, you're not going to gain a ton of it to switch to it from PHP Ruby world? Or do you think it's a little more powerful kind of thing?
I think that if you're a scientist, you're going to be more likely to get benefit from Python. I think that the Python community is made up of academics, more working academics, right? People who are accomplishing some task, doing research, needing to crunch numbers. And so Python has this really fantastic number crunching library that everybody's really into. And there's a lot of stuff like that. And I've heard people like, gee, I think his name is Joe Walsh. I'm pulling a blank right now, but I feel really bad. But kind of popular developers saying, you know, I completely moved away from R for statistical modeling and number crunching to Python. And so I've seen a lot of that lately where people are like leaving R and going to Python. But I think really it has to do with your job and what has to be done, right? With PHP, there's no question using it as not a web application is strange. Like I still don't know why Composer is written in PHP. I have no idea. It doesn't make sense to me unless you want to say, I don't feel like people are going to be comfortable installing some other, like compiling a binary or installing a binary from a package or something. I don't know. The PHP package manager Composer probably should not be written in PHP. Just my thoughts. And then you have like Ruby, right? Which again, to me, it seems like a lightweight scripting language. Like I wouldn't use Ruby for anything big or important. Other people would. That's been proven time and time again. But then Twitter has to change to Scala. You know, they have to. It's just, to me, Ruby is like, I don't even know. It's a pretty language in a lot of ways. I like how they get rid of a lot of unnecessary stuff like semicolons. They have implicit returns. You can directly access instance variables with the at symbol, and that's kind of nice to see. It makes things really clear. But as a language, it doesn't have type safety. I'd rather use PHP to make a web app than I would use Ruby, which is a really unpopular opinion, but, you know, I don't care. Hell, I'd rather use Hack than either of them, but that's beside the point. But Python, you know, people end up using it who are statisticians, who are doing these kind of things, because it's almost like, how much of this is even cultural? You know, if one group of people start using one tool and they build up all of the tooling for their purposes, then all of a sudden it's a better tool.
Yeah, and it's not... My first response is to say, well, then I just dismiss it. I was actually about to say, well, I don't care about the culture. I don't want to, you know, learn Ruby just because a whole bunch of, you know, hipster San Franciscans use Ruby. I want to learn it. I want to add to my particular tech stack that I have right now because it's actually adding something. But the thing is, part of that is if a whole bunch of people use one tool versus another, then the infrastructure that gets built up around it actually will impact your use of it. It's one of the reasons why we used SAS instead of Less for ages, because the SAS community was creating a lot more additional tools around it in a way that the Less community wasn't. I think Less is catching up, but it's kind of like, it's not just that SAS was better than Less, but that you're getting more from there. So I think it's that aspect of the fact that I see people doing crunching and analysis, especially in academic and also news sense, because they're doing a lot of analysis using Python. So to me, that said, well, Python must be much better at analysis and everything than PHP is. And again, I've got these, you know, an API that is supposed to be providing this incredible amount of data analysis over, you know, just unbelievable amounts of records, where I can see Ruby and PHP not necessarily being the best fit. And I'm just looking at it being like, okay, well, what? And that's where I'm like, okay, well, it must be Python or Go or Erlang or Rust or whatever, cool, hip, whatever. But I don't care, you know, I don't care about cool, hip, but I do think that I acknowledge that there's something there. And so before you go, I got to ask you the part two of the clarifying questions. So you're talking about functional languages. Could you give like a, you know, a Sean McCool intro to functional languages and what that means and how it's different from imperative?
If you need to construct something in an imperative language, you might set a variable to an initial value. Then you might loop over some collection. And as you loop over that collection, you modify that value so that when you return the value, it'll be the correct value. So the idea is you set it up, you might loop over stuff, and each run through the loop, you're changing that value. And then at the end, you return the correct result. And that's a really imperative way of solving the problem. It's not declarative in that you can't look at it and easily see, okay, this transformation is occurring. What you see is I have to look and understand that this is going to loop. For each iteration of this loop, I'm using my mind to put in this value, and then I can see that, okay, the original values get modified, and then in the end, everything works out together. Well, functional programming is different from that in that you highly favor immutable data. You don't actually loop over stuff and modify that original value. What happens is you kind of declare that in order to get the result I intend, I take in these values and I transform them in these ways. So you can say it's more declarative in that you actually write what the transformations are. First, I want to perform this transformation. Then I want to perform that transformation. And you're doing this without having this mousetrap Rube Goldbergian algorithm that has to run in order to modify those values correctly. You're doing it with instead these small transformations, one after another, that result in the correct value. So you can think of it as kind of like the Unix way of thinking, where you have all these small tools like ls to get a directory listing, grep to pull out the lines that match an expression, less to do pagination. You put these things together to get the outcome that you want, and you do it with pipes, right? You pipe the output of less into grep, and then you pipe the output of grep into, or you know what I'm saying, I got that order wrong. But the idea is that there is an interface between these tools. That's the standard in, standard out interface. And the data flows from one to another, and you don't have to, since, you know, it's not like you have loops or these crazy procedures that are running. You just say, give me this, transform it like that. And then you end up with the result that you're looking for. Functional programming is about writing functions in the mathematics sense, not functions in the I want to name an algorithm sense, right? So if I go into PHP, I can create a function that is 150 lines long, and it will return the result that I intend. It'll do it correctly. But in functional programming, you have these, the idea of, you don't understand determinism. So determinism, let's just say if I have a function, it's called add one. I put in the number one as my argument and I get out two. Every single time I put in the number one, I will get two out. That's a deterministic result. There is no side effects. There are no input and outputs happening during the execution of that function. The output is going to directly map to the input. So what can happen in this situation is that you could have an infinitely large hash map of values. On one side of the hash map, you have all numbers possible. On the other side of the hash map, you have all numbers possible, but have been incremented by one. And so when I call add one and I pass in the number one, it's going to send out two. It could be looking that up in that hash map, and there's no arbitrary effects that are happening around that will change that value. So it doesn't even have to increment one to give me the correct result. Now, if I am saying, give me the date time inside that function, and then you add 5 seconds to it. So maybe the function is like 5 seconds from now. So the function is called 5 seconds from now or seconds from now, and you pass in how many seconds you want from now, and it actually gets the date time from your computer, then that is a side effect. That date time is going to, every time you run this function, the input you give it does not map to the output. So it's non-deterministic, right? So the idea within the functional paradigm is that you want to create these functions that are like mathematically valid. You want to create these functions that are deterministic as frequently as possible so that they can be piped together so that you can have expected outcomes. Now, the reality is, in order to make anything useful, you have to have side effects, right? Input and output. You can, like Haskell, for example, which is like the functional man's functional programming language. It has this cool idea of a specific type of variable that's an IO variable. So this is where type systems get really interesting, because you can say, well, if I put in this number, this function's going to run a query and then give me back a number. So you can act like the function's input type is an integer and the function's output type is an integer. But Haskell says that's just not right. That's not correct. The function's output type is not an integer. It's an integer. It's an IO integer, meaning that it has been contaminated with side effects. So you're actually writing, this type system actually describes far more. It's a more honest type system. I guess to me, what functional programming means is programming in deterministic functions and using immutable data, immutable values. Because if you don't have immutable values, then you have the chance of one value being used in one part of the application and another. It's transformed in one side, causing a completely unexpected behavior on the other side. But if you have unexpected behaviors, then these are no longer mathematical functions, because mathematical functions don't have randomness entered into them. They're very rigid. They're structured. They're more careful. You can predict what the outcomes are going to be, and that's why it's math and not art, right? Does that make sense? Am I just kind of...
For a top-level intro, I get the deterministic function, and I understand both the value of really predictable functions, and I understand the value of immutability. So I think I don't get the whole thing, but I think I really get a lot of the pieces of that. And it's a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about even in the PHP world and the DDD world, about things about like how can these things benefit our programming, even in a language where that's not inherently a part of it. And sometimes when you do that type of stuff, strict typing or caring about immutability, people say, well, why don't you just go use another language? And so it's sounding like this is maybe one of the places you'd go, is if this is something you want, well, go to a language that actually has this kind of inherently as a part of it, which is, it's more built in to be really particular about what's coming in and out and what's mutable and not.
Yeah, but type systems, whether they're strict, whether they're static or dynamic, type systems are like attributes of a person. You could take two people who are both very type A type personalities, and you can categorize them as such. But in reality, there's these differences that are subtle or not so, that change the way that either they perceive something or you perceive them. Every type system is different, and it has its different set of values, its pros and cons. So I never have really enjoyed that argument of, if you don't like this type system, then you know you should go do something else. Yes, there are a lot of tools with a lot of different systems out there, but it's not wrong to want something different. It's not wrong to like what you have in a certain stack and want it to be slightly different. That's perfectly reasonable and perfectly fine, because it's unreasonable to believe that for any of our work, we have the correct tools. We just have what we have grabbed off of the shelf. I mean, if we really want to spend all the time to determine what the exact right tool for us is, by the time we're done, our needs are going to have changed and all of our findings are going to be invalid.
That's why I'm asking you to tell me, so I don't have to do all that process. Make my decisions for me, Sean.
All right. Well, if you want your decisions made for you, here's what you need to do. You need to find the languages that do things the most differently from the ones you use and actually make a long-term effort to learn them, because this is going to give you the most perspective, and perspective is all that matters. Knowing PHP or Ruby just doesn't matter. Those are pointless use of skills to have if you can walk into a situation and gain mastery over those in a relatively reasonable amount of time. If you can understand how the language thinks, if you understand enough about programming, if you understand enough about the formalization of logic, then you can build those skills quite easily. If you know PHP and you can do object-oriented programming with PHP, and you know, you understand the solid principles and all of that, then you can implement the same ideas in Ruby or Python or whatever. And then you have to learn, you know, a few quirks to get into the mood of the language. But mostly it's you know, you're good to go. But you're not going to be good to go if you tried Haskell. You would just crash and burn forever, you know? But like, it's worth doing that. It's worth going through this long, laborious process. And it's not actually that low, but it is. I mean, like, I've been studying Scala and I just think, oh my why would anyone do this to themselves? Why would anybody try to learn this? Because it's never ending. It has the largest syntax I have ever seen on a programming language. You can do things in so many ways, and nobody knows what's right because nobody knows your situation. So it's basically like, okay, you learn Scala, you do 2-3 years of learning Scala to get a general mastery over the language, and then you use a very small subset of the language for this specific task, and then you use a very small subset of the language for this specific task. So you might be doing completely different things, writing libraries, then writing a script, then writing an application. It's crazy, but you, in order to actually use the language, you have to learn so much stuff, like algebraic data types, functional composition, which is an important part of functional programming, right? Because what people are always asking about in functional programming is, don't you just end up with a ton of functions? If everything's supposed to be the small function, like in PHP, we have classes that aggregate functions. We have namespaces. The idea is generally in functional languages, you have all these things too. So it's not really different. You still have multiple levels of cohesion and packaging, and different languages do modules in different ways. But again, this is just me rambling, I guess, where I'm thinking, okay, one thing that is funny about functional and imperative programming is the things that you think are going to be different aren't. You still have those levels of cohesion. You still have those groupings. But then the things that you'd never even thought of, those are the things that are different, and that's why it's important to learn it.
So it's one of the things I love about what you're saying is go do things, and you said this to me quite a few times, go do things purely because they're going to make you, your brain work differently, you're going to be more experienced and brain expanded, and then you may end up going back and writing PHP, but you're writing it differently. And I hear that, and I love it. There's this part of me, the concrete versus the ideal or whatever it ends up being, where part of me is like, man, I'll spend 3 years learning Erlang, you know, just because I'll write better code. And there's part of me is like, screw that. You're like one of the most, you know, expansive, exploratory people I know. And even you are looking at being like, it's going to take me 3 years learning all this mathematical stuff. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. So I'm kind of balancing this, like, do it just because, don't always be so pragmatic that all you care about is adding to your tech stack and becoming more powerful. And you just want to become a better developer in whatever you're doing. And that, I think that's a really important point. And I think there's also some aspect of concreteness of like, well, but we could look at it and say, well, one of these languages is literally only ever used in academic settings, and it's going to take you 15 years. And then some of these languages, you might be able to be up and running and actually doing functional things that have a significant impact on the productivity of your team within 6 months. And, you know, and so it's like there's this combination of the more different it is, the more you can learn, but also there's some level of what impact is it going to have on my ability to satisfy the needs of my clients?
How much of that is even real? Like, we're at some point in time where people like Ruby for the web, that doesn't even make sense until it became a massive, huge thing because somebody just did it. Like, I don't believe in the idea that something is right for a specific tool necessarily. I don't know how to explain. Obviously, you wouldn't probably want to pick up Haskell and use it for a web agency, but a lot more and more Haskell is actually being used outside of academia, and you can go and see that there's like CMSs built with it, all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't expect. If you are going to learn Erlang, it wouldn't take you many years to learn Erlang. It's just Scala is what I was complaining about specifically. Yeah. But I think Scala is a perfect language because, like I said, you can just study it forever and keep building and be able to do anything with it. It's just crazy that way. But it is going to require that kind of long-term study. So for me, I run everything Linux. Like my phone runs Linux, my computers run Linux. And to me, Linux, using Linux is a long-term investment. I can continue to improve and understand it better and modify it to suit my needs. But a lot of people don't want that. A lot of people don't want to continue to modify their stuff and to have to deal with the quirks all the time. Because using Linux is a lot like learning quirks and learning how to deal with them. I think that programming is a lot like the same thing, right? If you want to do something that does not require you to stumble over and over again, then you need to probably stick with stuff that's like what you already have. So if I hear a lot of PHP developers being like, oh, I need to expand as a developer. What am I going to do? Oh, I'll learn Ruby because that's really hot. My question is, sure, learn Ruby. Like if that's what makes you happy, do that. But if your goal is to expand, then sticking to something close is more like It sounds to me, and I'm really kind of, I'm not as judgmental as I sound when I say this, but it sounds to me like it's like a fear-driven choice. I think it's possible to jump in to where you're, you know, jumping into icy cold water up to your head. And I think that's a great situation to be in too.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about, like, let's say there's a continuum, right? And this is the most arbitrary BS ever, but whatever. The continuum, the far left side is graphic design and then UI design and then front end design and then, you know, some kind of like a PHP. And then, you know, in this, like we said, in this space, we got PHP and then maybe Ruby and .NET MVC, especially because you got C# and Ruby isn't necessarily web. Maybe they're a little bit further along in a continuum, and maybe Python, maybe a little further along there's Go. And then I'm kind of picturing Erlang and Scala as being like further down the stack. And of course, then you say, well, where does C and C++ go there? I don't totally, maybe they're further down. I don't know. But it's kind of the continuum to me is like really, really programmy, thinky, abstracty on one side versus like the you're hardly writing any code and it's basically markup on the other side. And so for me, I'm like, okay, so if Erlang is this like hyper academic, hyper thoughtful, because what you just kind of said was, okay, well, if you just want to learn something that you're comfortable with, it's not that icy deep water, icy cold water, then just go learn Ruby. So that's like not lazy. That is the minimal change from a PHP developer. Let's say, okay, you're a PHP developer. Ruby is minimal change. Erlang is maximal change or something like that. What do we have? Where are different things along the stack? I feel like I know a lot of people learning Python and Go. That would make me think they're probably closer. They're not quite as much icy cold water, but what do you think?
You're trying to get me to answer things in a way that would make me uncomfortable. I think that your continuum is actually a measure of distance, of your perceived distance from where you are now. That's what it feels like to me. So it feels less like a web thing over here, an academic thing over here, because the reality is, you know, it's going to be like a three-dimensional matrix of complicated factors.
Absolutely.
And I have no clue where things really lie. I'm based on like this whole individual perspective thing. But yeah, so I think it's pretty clear that Python, Ruby, and PHP are kind of in a family, right? You have these dynamic languages and they support typing to various degrees each. And at least with PHP, and I guess Ruby is changing too. Ruby's becoming a little bit more typed, isn't it?
I haven't followed that, but I haven't followed a lot.
Yeah, there's some annotation stuff coming down the road that's going to create assertions based on types. And I don't think Adam is really going to be that interested in this. But I don't know. To me, it's like this crazy set of factors. But I actually don't think that something like Erlang is that complicated or alien or not useful. I think it's quite useful. And the thing I think is if you just build PHP applications all the time in PHP, then you learn the best practices of PHP. And here's where I think it's dangerous. There's PHP the right way. It's a website. It's about teaching people what modern PHP is like. And I think that kind of thing is important because what PHP used to be capable of was basically like the server page pattern where you include stuff at the top, like mysql.php, functions.php, or whatever crazy stuff you have. Then you run a bunch of queries, and then at the very end, you close your PHP tag, and then you write a bunch of HTML. And that's kind of what PHP was like back then. I mean, I wrote a ton of apps like that. But over time, the need for sophistication has grown. I mean, we have to make responsive apps. We have to make all kinds of crazy stuff. And so we've become more sophisticated. In doing so, we've adopted these frameworks, and they've really helped us reduce the amount of bugs, increase the amount of complexity we can deliver in the same amount of time. And all of that has trained us what is good and what is bad in PHP development. It just so happens that that's a very specific circumstance. If you stay in PHP development and you have, okay, I name my stuff in this way because this is what works best. I organize my things in this way because this is what works best. You may have really good ideas about best practices that make you a much more effective developer than you were previously. But if you go into the realm of another language, the paradigm has shifted enough to where your best practices are now no longer applicable. And I see this all the time in the Dev Discussions IRC channel, for example, where somebody will be like, I really don't like that approach because of this. And it's because of familiarity. Over and over again, it's because of familiarity. To the point where I personally think familiarity is almost like this bad word. Like, I want to reject my appreciation of something due to my familiarity with it, right? Because if I'm learning from a mentor, should I be saying, You know, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know that I agree. I think that's a really a bad way of learning. You shouldn't be second guessing all the stuff that you're learning. I think being critical is fine, but if you were learning some concept from someone and it was such a simple concept that you as the student could accurately and appropriately be challenging your mentor, then you're not standing to learn anything. You need to live as an apprentice. You need to be doing the whole wax on, wax off thing for long enough to have the right way of thinking about it before you can even approach the problem. And that's what mentorship is kind of about. It's about giving you the right perspective, because if it's just memorizing the syntax of another language, then who cares? Everybody could do that approximately equally in their own time without the need of anyone else. But the mentor has the opportunity of reshaping your mind to perceive the problems and the solutions in a new way. And only if you live that new way for long enough can you really perceive it. Otherwise, if you already feel like you perceive it, then just give up. Don't even bother. I'm really against the idea of preferring things because they're what you know. I think it's like a big barrier to growth. So what were we talking about? So we were talking about like the difference between PHP and other stuff.
Yeah,
right?
And I think in the end, the I'm trying to abstract things, but just like everybody always does, when you ask an abstract question, it's really a representation of a concrete question you have in your head that you feel like you shouldn't be asking. But the problem is, you know, we've talked about this before, I'm not really interacting with how you're responding to the question I asked. I'm really responding to how you answering the question I want to know, which I kind of jokingly said, which is, tell me what to learn next, right? And I think part of it is just going to, because, I mean, even if I'm completely following the whole, you know, mentorship, don't worry about how, you know, whatever, forsake familiarity or whatever, in the end, as a PHP developer, primarily PHP developer who wants to expand both my abilities as a developer, but also my capabilities as a developer and our capabilities as a dev shop, I'm in this particular place of seeing data analysis, and especially kind of like bigger data analysis, is a thing that's coming up for me. And so there's part of me that says, I want to go do Python because it's going to be the fastest, easiest way for me to expand the capabilities of my dev shop to include a greater level of ability in terms of data analysis. And there's a part of me that says, I want to go learn Scala because again, this next door neighbor who's a computer science professor has just been like pitching me on all these things that I don't understand at all. And I really want to learn because I understand that learning them is going to make me a better dev. And it might be both, right? Like, I might have to say, like, here's this immediate need of a tool that will expand my abilities at dev shop, and I can learn it quickly. Let's do that now. And then additionally, just as a part of life, I need to be always growing myself and exposing myself to new things. But it doesn't have to be either or. And that makes me much more comfortable, because just saying Python makes me feel like I'm doing the familiar thing, right? And just saying Erlang or Scala says, like, well, that's a really cool idea, but you just basically consumed all your free time for the next, you know, year in a way that's not actually going to have a drastic impact. Now, of course, I'll be a better developer, but it's not going to expand the tool set that my dev shop offers. And I think maybe just doing both and just allowing each one to provide a unique benefit both to me and the dev shop is kind of where I'm leaning, just based on the conversation we're having here.
Yeah, I like to stay short-sighted. Like, I don't want to really plan too big on the outside, because all that stuff is, it just fails, and I never can see what's coming. But I have this idea that when I'm reading technical books, like when I started reading the Blue Book, the Eric Evans DDD book, I, you know, read a couple chapters, and then I feel like, okay, I'm kind of gathering this stuff, but I don't really feel comfortable. I'm going to go and live my life a little bit and then come back to it. So what I end up doing actually is reading two or three different technical books at once. Now, I do the same thing with long video courses. So Coursera has these amazing courses. And you can actually go and learn functional programming using Scala from the creator of Scala for free. And you can do this, but if you're like me, you got 2-3 weeks into the course and you're like, oh, I can't keep up anymore. It's too much. So I leave. Mm-hmm. And then I can come back later and participate again with a whole new set of whatever. So to me, you don't pursue one thing ever, because it's too much. It's too much for me to comprehend to really pursue one thing that's dramatic departure from what I'm used to. So I have to split up my efforts. Otherwise, I mean, I just can't grow that fast in any one way. I can continue growing from these first two chapters of DDD and continue growing from these first two chapters of functional programming in Scala or whatever, and they don't conflict. They reinforce, right? So in my mind, as an object-oriented developer, I think that the thing that's going to benefit you the most is learning the functional paradigm. Now, you don't have to go incredibly far down that road. You can make it a little bit and get comfortable. Start implementing these ideas in your everyday code. Because like I said, like I've seen code where the people have written, like one of my colleagues, she'll show me code. And then just because I'm pursuing functional programming and because he's interested in it, I'll rewrite it in two lines using PHP, the same language he's writing it in. But now it's in a functional, written in a functional paradigm, and it's easier to understand. There's less code. And the problem is you have to become used to these concepts in order to use them. So PHP has array map, array reduce, and it has basically the tools you need to do basic functional programming. Of course, you can't do really nice functional programming, really thick functional programming with PHP. It's lacking a lot of stuff that other languages like Haskell, Scala, and Erlang, even Rust would have. But it's just, if you learn some functional programming, which you gotta do because it's so important right now, I don't know the future, and hell, I don't even know the now, but if you learn one thing, make it functional programming. Make it, just get out there. I mean this to every developer out there. This is the thing that I think really changes you towards being more of a computer scientist. Because if you're anything like me, you're just some dude who walked in from the street. And my first job was to turn recipes into HTML, right? And so I got so tired of manually doing all the markup that I made this little PHP window that would actually store it into a database. Actually, it didn't even store it at the database at the time. It just output HTML so I could save it into a file. I mean, that's where I came from, right? But I think learning functional programming, it actually teaches you a little bit more how to think about algorithms and how to code in a way that doesn't bite you in the butt later. And it's almost like for free. Like functional programming gives you all these advantages that the solid principles are trying to give you.
It's funny because you were talking about functional programming in PHP, and I actually realized that Karani, the main SaaS that we run, I hired this kind of pretty brainy developer to do some work like a year or two ago, and he actually brought in a functional PHP library and has actually written some of the stuff in functional, I guess, using functions provided by this functional PHP library, which I assume by this guy named Lars, and I'm Strojny, maybe it sounds, Lars sounds very Swedish, but his last name looks Polish, so I don't know. But it's Strojny, that's his GitHub username, and it's functional-PHP. And so I'm looking at that, I'm like, I may have even been using some of these concepts by interacting with his code and not totally understanding it. And you just gave me like the charge. That's the charge I want. Go learn functional programming. Great. Sold. Coursera's learning functional programming with Scala. Scala. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And that I think is, that's what I need, is because it just feels like there's just so much of, everybody's got their little pet thing and everybody got their little exciting thing. Everyone wants you to be using this thing or trying that thing or that thing or the other. So I think, you know, of course, I'm asking you, so this is focused on you, but whatever. I respect you. So I heard go learn functional programming, and I'm going to do that, and it's going to make me a better developer in 5 days, and I'll hold you to that.
I wouldn't suggest learning Ember.js or Angular, or I don't really care about these tools. I mean, these are just look at them, see if they fit, and then go with it. You know, I don't care. The things that really matter are the things that change you in some significant way to me. So the idea of domain-driven design. Am I doing like proper domain-driven design ever? The answer is no. I just don't work in those kind of situations. I don't see myself working in those kind of situations. I don't want to work in those kind of situations. But what it did do is it taught me better how to think about modeling difficult problems, how to take difficult logic and put it into a system so it's manageable. That's the whole focus of DDD. TDD, I don't code with TDD. I mean, I do sometimes now that I know how to do it and I'm like relatively fluid with it. I fall into it in some situations, but mostly I don't because I'm trying different ways of spiking out solutions and I just don't do it. But it did teach me what I need to know about isolating and designing objects. It taught me a ton about that. BDD taught me a lot about how communication can fix a lot of the problems we have, which are actually about people and actually about transferring ideas from one person to another. So we have all these problems, and then we have all these methodologies to solve them. And to me, it's about, you know, what can I personally get out of this? Not, am I going to become this DDD evangelist where I go from company to company DDDing their entire world up? I just don't care about any of that. I care about saying, okay, now I sit down and this is the problem I do want to solve. This is orthogonal to the problems I've been learning to solve, kind of. Like, you know, what I'm using Scala for now, I could do in PHP. It just doesn't matter. But like I said, Scala is forcing me to do these different things. And you can do some crazy stuff. In PHP, the way event sourcing is done is really kind of different from the way event sourcing is done in a functional approach. And if you can see both of them, then suddenly the idea of what's actually happening becomes more clear. You're seeing two different ways of doing the same thing, and then the parts that are the same, that holds the truth somewhere.
Yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense.
So how much editing am I going to have to do to drop out these rambles? I have this brilliant idea, though. I'm going to get a notepad and write down what I originally meant to say. And then as I'm rambling, I can say, oh, I see, and then I can fix it.
That's fine by me, as long as it doesn't make me sound like a crazy person and I'm responding something different. Before we close up, there's one thing that you said that I really appreciate that I don't think I've ever heard before. I've always seen it as a bad aspect of my personality that I've always got 10 books that I'm reading and 3 videos that I'm halfway through. And I mean, right now I've got literally 3 YouTube talks that I'm paused somewhere in between. If you look at my Goodreads profile, the number of books that I'm marked as reading, it's dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens. And I'm in the middle of semi-learning several languages and several frameworks. And I've always seen that as like a, you know, jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing. And I've been trying to really hone in on getting better at some things. But I think there's something about the way you were talking about just your learning process that made me feel a little more like, you know, this is just part of how I learn. This is just part of how I think, and that's okay. So I think I need to process that. Maybe we talk about that in another time, but I'm liking this kind of thinking about, you know, not everybody is going to become, you know, the C++ master and just become the ultimate C++ guru of all time and, you know, focus really deep in. And there's a lot of different, you know, circumstances and personality traits and stuff like that that may put you on, I don't know if I want to say it's the broader jack of all trades, master of none thing, but just different ways of learning and different ways of using tools and everything, so.
Yeah, I think even that jack of all trades concept is to me a little confining as a categorization. Like, I don't like to think of myself as, okay, this is who I am. I am this PHP developer who is doing some other stuff. This is not who I am. These things are not who I am, right? I like to think of myself as a process. Like, I crunch away at reality and experience and live and love and learn. And, you know, what I am is not what I'm going to be. It's not what I used to be. And I like the idea that if I wanted to be like a DDD master and I didn't, you know, have the perspective to understand it, that if I sat down with the book, I could go through it and spend my life studying on massive chalkboards, trying to rip apart the meanings to try to understand. And I could take 2 years learning these concepts where if I ran into a problem, I figured out why I had this problem. So the problem is now that maybe my object-oriented programming isn't up to speed or maybe something else. Then I go and I play with that idea a little bit and then I come back. Then all of a sudden that those next 2 chapters, which I could have spent a month trying to pull apart, suddenly they flow together for me. I don't want to struggle through learning. I don't think it's, there's always a little of that and that's okay and that's good. And it actually feels great, right? That reward cycle. But I think that if you're just smashing your head against the wall, you're not going to become a genius. You know, you're going to have to go to the hospital. We're better off trying to like keep this meta-analysis cycle running where, okay, I'm losing my ability to grow. I'm reading the same chapter 4 times and I haven't gotten any more out of it than last time. I need to stop this and do something that's more productive. And I guess it's kind of growth hacky, but I don't care about this whole turn myself into something. I don't know what the hell I'm going to end up being. That's my goal, is not to shape this thing into some idea that I have. Because if I were to be on my deathbed, this ideal image that I have in my mind now, that would put me at so much lower of a capacity than I truly have that I don't want to trust my image, my ideals now. I don't want to trust any of that. I just want to process, live, identify where my learning is working and where it's not, and then eventually just have faith that it's all going to come together one way or another. And even if I don't end up to be a C++ master, my work and my studies will make me a worthwhile, valuable person.
I like that. There's a joke we have in Titan that we basically are just, whenever something comes up and whether you do a really good job or you had a really tough time or whatever, we just kind of just say, I'm just trying to do a good job. And I think to do a good job, I think there ended up being a CSS Tricks article that was basically, yeah, CSS, just try and do a good job. And then we were cracking up because this kind of really encapsulates quite a bit of that, which is he's looking at this tweet where someone said, my CSS is full of self-doubt. What class name system is best practice today? And is the Cascade good or evil this week? And he has this whole talk, this whole post where he just says, just try and do a good job. Don't be lazy. Learn, you know, do the best with what you have in front of them, you know. And it's just kind of use the tools that are useful to you is one of the headlines in here. And I'm like, yeah, this is kind of what we're doing here. We're trying to do a good job, but that there's a little bit of that that is kind of like the tongue in cheek, like, well, it's not just, you know, we're not just trying to do a good job in our cubicle 9-to-5. We're trying to get better and grow. But in the end, it's not as if you're waiting till you can finally be that ideal 3 years from now. It's just kind of like we do what we have with what's in front of us, and then we get better and we have good experiences. So we're getting all existential here, but I like what you said.
It's like the idea of the perfectionist versus the person who just loves what they're mm-hmm. doing, who's going to end up better in the end, you know? Just because you have an idea of what is more potent doesn't mean it is, right? That's why we have science, to kind of give us an idea that, oh, all of our initial assumptions of what makes sense are not necessarily accurate. You know, we need other algorithms. And it's not like we can apply science really directly to our lives all the time. So we're just actually always just making do with what we have. So I think we should all feel really comfortable with ourselves. And if we feel like, okay, I'm going to go and study Erlang. And if that means go to learnyouinerlang.com or whatever the website's URL is and reading for 10 minutes and being bored and leaving, then that's, you know, it doesn't matter. You know where you can go learn more. You have an idea of what it's written like and what you can expect. And these are things that will empower you in the future. So I don't think there's anything wrong with doing something for 10 minutes and quitting. I think that's awesome. I think people should set themselves up for quitting all the time.
I like it. I do. I like it.
Okay.
Because it's the freedom to do something regardless of whether or not you know you're going to do it for the next 4 years of your life. It's just experiencing and recognizing. And that's something I've gotten from you a lot recently, which I like, which is regardless of what you end up using, every experience you have is going to make you better, more, it's going to expand your brain. And that's kind of the end goal. So.
And you don't want to end up in a rut. You don't want to stop having fun. That's like I went through like this 2 or 3 year period, which I only retroactively understood as like this depression from not actually making any progress with the things I used to be so interested in. So I decided, okay, I'm going to hit computer science hard. I'm going to go to Khan Academy. I'm going to pick up my math skills, which are atrocious by any standards. And I'm going to kind of, you know, and just by doing that, just by revisiting the stuff I learned in high school, learning how to solve problems rather with a pencil and paper again, which I had forgotten how to do because I never need to do this. So like if I have this like long, these super long numbers and they need to be divided, I entirely forgot how to do that on pencil and paper. But going back to Khan Academy and reworking through this early education was so enjoyable for me. I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm like a math genius. And there's like nebulas and stuff in the background and stars exploding. But in reality, like in no time, my kid's going to be better at math than me. It's just the way it is. But it just feels great. And it like reinvigorates me to do more. I love the idea of, you know, going back to basics and realizing that you, when you first learned something, it was to struggle through and be able to like, you know, doggy paddle and tread water. That's the term, tread water. But now that you've kind of got used to it, going back to basics makes you realize, oh, I didn't really truly understand these things in the first place. So, I mean, we're constantly dealing with noise and trying to make sense of it. We don't actually know what's happening, even when we think we do. It's an illusion, right? It's false. So I'm very happy to work with you and work with other people and kind of continually be relearning what we thought we knew, so that we can, I don't know, have fun. thanks again for chatting with me.
All right. Hey, it's total pleasure as always talking to you, man.
All right. So maybe we'll meet next week. Maybe not. That's okay. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Until then, have a good weekend.
You too, man. Later.